Good morning.
Good morning.
How's everybody today?
Good.
Are you happy?
Yes.
That's a very good answer. Isn't it?
Yes.
It is. Despite all the problems and all the troubles in the world, by and large, most of us, much of the time, have pretty good lives. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. Remember that, and the next time your tire goes flat. You know, I walked in the door here a little bit ago. I thought, man, it smells like smoke around here. I'm thinking, well, those wildfires must be right around the corner. Well, they were. I guess there was a little fire in the neighbor right across the way here. I guess the compost bag was burning or something. Well, it didn't happen to you, so don't let it bother you. Now, if you needed to help, that'd be a different thing, right? Now, in light of today's gospel, you got any money? Well, I had said, you know, you're supposed to share. I just thought I would help you do that. I don't have to tell you that, really, from time to time, probably more often than I even know, I say silly things. Thank you. I've made my point. When I say something silly, much of it, not always, I realize I'm doing it. And I do it for a reason, because it helps you to listen, right? Like, do you got any money? Oh, God, not another drive. No, I meant for me. I do that on purpose, because it helps us to maybe pay attention a little more. You've heard these readings a long time. I've preached on them for 40 years. And somehow we have to really maybe try to see something new or to see the old thing in a new way. So as I said to the 4 o'clock Mass yesterday, are you ready to worship?
Yes.
Are you ready to really express your love for God?
Yes.
And to worship and adore them? I mean, that's really why we're here, right? I mean, besides the collection. We're really here to worship and praise and thank God. But not only that, to let God love us and allow God to, I don't know that I want to say worship, but to let God be happy because we are, because we exist. And we exist in Him. I'm getting ahead of myself because I said this 3/4 of the way through the homily yesterday, but I know many of you have grandkids and some of you have brand new grandchildren. Don't they make you really happy? Don't you like, wow, I mean, life is just so good for all the troubles and weariness in the world. And man, that little baby, I just see that. I mean, I know, I mean, Jim's been grinning from ear to ear for like, how old is that kid now? 7, 8 months, 10 months? 18 months. Is he out of diapers yet?
No, not yet.
Not yet. So you're still in that department.
But
you still got a big old smile on your face.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So I'm just highlighting those things, you see. So it's not only we here because we owe God worship and praise. We're here. What did I hear? I was on my 40-day retreat about 40 years ago. God made us because He thought we would like it. How about that? That kind of semi comes from the Baltimore Catechism. God made us to know Him, to love Him in this life, and be happy with Him in the next. You could paraphrase that, and I literally was told this on that retreat, I think in 1992. God made you because He thought you would like it. How's that working out? Pretty good. Pretty good. I can think a lot of the places in the world you don't want to be right now. There's a lot to be grateful for. We all have problems. I have concerns. You have concerns. We all have problems, one size, flavor, or another. So we're here to hear the Word of God. And in light of the readings today, again, I know I've offered these reflection questions before, But I think they're particularly pertinent in any and every age. I mean, I could raise these questions 3-4 times a year. Because of the culture that we live in and the way the world is now, I think it's very important, not only because of politics, the tensions and social ills, sometimes even the evil that's going on in the world, but the ongoing consequences effects of COVID and the social ills, you see. So it's not only are you happy, what makes you happy, but what gives you a deep sense of identity, a deep sense of purpose and meaning in your life. More than, but a part of, what's most important to you. Obviously, that Leonardo David is very important to Jim. He loves that little boy, and that little boy loves him. You notice they were just hanging on to that kid because he was going to run up and sit on Jim's lap while he was trying to play and sing. And that gives great joy and happiness and meaning to his life, both the boy and the grandparent, you see. But the culture doesn't afford and allow us really to have those kinds of reflections because we're constantly, are we not, bombarded by a consumerist culture, media, advertising, which is a multi-billion dollar enterprise, tirelessly working to tell us who we are, what we should buy, what will make us happier, smarter, live longer, be rich, and become the coolest, most beautiful person in the world. Did I accentuate or exaggerate that too much? Not at all. I kind of did that on purpose. I did do it on purpose. Did it make me look smart? Do you like me better? Does this make me look fat? You know I've done that many times now. But it's the culture, isn't it? Vanity of vanities. I don't know the numbers, but I mean, I have broadly a memory. Isn't the cosmetic industry like $1 billion a year? Oh, you have smooth skin. Ooh. Well, smooth skin is nice, but it ain't going to get you to heaven. You know? So these are not that they're bad things, that they're good things. But they very unconsciously, or maybe at times quite consciously, take away our capacity to have an interior life. We live in a culture that is constantly on the surface. Not only with iPhones now and iPads and videos and YouTube and all the X and all those things. Wow. In a lot of ways, I would say that the first reading is not really one of my favorites, but it's a very important reading. Because it really makes an essential point about our human existence. Without a meaningful purpose and a personal sense of identity in life, it's very easy to fall into the false world of vanity, really living in what's called spiritually the false self, with the illusion that I'm happy or I need to be or have to be or I even think I'm perfect. Because I buy the things that the world thinks I should buy or should have or that I need. On the one hand, Koheleth can't really be denied. The fact is, we work all our lives. You know the old ditty phrase, I owe, it's off to work I go. We labor throughout our lives to provide for ourselves stability and security and the pleasure of good things and good. Thank God for good things, really. We gather and use things of the world for our good and hopefully for the good of others, really, if we have more than we need. But inevitably, as Koheleth says, we all die. No big shock there, no big surprise. But what do you do with what's left over? Now, here's a little bit of encouragement, please. If you're wise, make the effort to do a will, so that someone doesn't come up to one of your relatives and says, hey, tell him to give my share of that inheritance. I think we just heard that in the gospel, did we not? The statistics are pretty small. I think maybe only 30% of people do a will. But that's not really the point of the homily, is it? But you can't take it with you. Now, on the other hand, we all know quite realistically that life is in fact greater than the value of our possessions, any status or reputation we think we've attained, or certainly not the ego inflation of our own making. We are what we are before the light and the love and the truth of Christ. And as people who profess Christ, and I know you do because, well, you're here. And Easter is not really that far away, or it wasn't all that long ago, really. And we all stood and professed together, I believe in God, we rejected Satan, I believe in Christ, etc. We sprinkled ourselves with water, and I hope and trust by my labor and by the grace of God, a lot more by the grace of God than my labor, you doing the best you can, as I'm trying to do, to live your life in a way and in a manner that lives the virtues of the Christian gospel. And I know that you know that at the end of the day, your deepest identity is in fact Christ. I know you don't think about it every day when you get up. I don't necessarily think about it explicitly that way, but I know it's true. But it becomes true, and we can feel and see that when it's revealed or realized in the uniqueness of how we express in love our connectedness and bonding through our experience and relationships with others. I mean, very simple example, and I don't really know the details, but I, you know, I was smelling that fire. I'm thinking, gosh, somebody's got a fire. And, you know, Angie walks in, and she's coming out of the bathroom, and she's kind of, well, I smell like smoke. Well, she went up to the house and knocked on the door. Did that person know their garage was on fire?
No.
You saved their lives. Well, at least you saved the garage. Well, now, is that going to save the world? No. Well, you did a generous and a kind thing. Now, maybe you smell like smoke, and okay, take a shower. It ain't bothering me. Don't let it worry you. But you see, it's about other-centeredness, not self-centeredness. We all know that love animates life, gives life meaning, energy, commitment, and creativity. I suppose I could choose any weekend, but just think back. It's only 4 weeks ago, 4th of July. And, of course, I don't know the numbers, but how many people packed up the car because they were going up north or they were going to concert somewhere? They packed up the car and to drive to a faraway place to visit relatives that they always go to and they always see on the 4th of July. Or they do this or that or the other thing, or they just walk across the yard and sit around and drink a couple beers with the guy next door. Why do people do that? Bonding, connectedness, relationship. And that's why I brought up not only politics, oh my God, what a headache that is, but the effects of COVID still, psychologically, socially, sociologically, those things are still happening. Loneliness is an epidemic in our culture. So when we do simple, obvious, even routine things like, oh my God, it's a holiday weekend, we're going to leave on Wednesday, we're going to like have 5 days, and you pack up, why do people do that? Because it gives a certain awe and wonder and fun and joy and hope and the connectedness and the belonging of life. Yeah, I know it's stressful sometimes. Well, we're not going to go this year. The price of gas, you know, we just can't afford it. Yeah, right. That's a bummer. But we still have good lives. And we have the surety and the security of our faith, despite and maybe because of all the things going on in the world that shouldn't be going on. So we turn to the gospel. Why? Now think about this. Why is this rich man so committed to save all this grain or harvest that he... Maybe it was beets. Maybe it was... What do they call those things? Zucchini. Maybe he had a great harvest of zucchini. And he could have given them to all his... He could have inflicted them on all his friends. But instead, he built bigger barns so he could save all those zucchini and use them all himself. That must have been one stinky barn. Don't you think? Oh, I got to tear down this barn because my harvest was so great. No, he says, my harvest Well, it was God's earth, God's soil, God's water, and God's sun that created the harvest. But my harvest is so great, I got to turn down this little shed I have, and I got to build a big old whatever, and I can put all my wheat and beets or asparagus or whatever in there and watch them rot before I can use them all. Wouldn't he have been more happy and more connected in love with others if he shared and realized that it really was God who gave him that great harvest? Yeah, you think that's pretty obvious, isn't it? Because if he saved it all, it's certainly going to rot and spoil before it can be any good for anybody. How do we get beyond, as a culture, as a people, as a world, how do we get beyond the very common need or feeling or desire to save and gather and compete against others for what really, more rightly and justly, could and should be shared? That's the Christian gospel. A meaningful and happy life begins with an other-centered heart. If we're all only looking at ourselves, well, that's got to get boring after a while, don't you think? Now, it doesn't mean that we can't have good things and enjoy good things. We well should enjoy things. God created for that very purpose. A dry and empty well provides water for no one. Isn't that why you go on the airplane and, no, if there's a this or that happened and the mask dropped down, first put the mask on yourself before you put it on someone else. Well, that sounds selfish. But an empty well gives water to no one. And if you're choking and coughing without putting your mask on, then you can't help the person next to you. It's not a matter of being selfish. It's a matter of being wise. So how do we get beyond these challenges in our consumer, competitive-based culture, media advertising, and all of that? The challenge and the invitation, of course, is to remember who we are. Because people who are happy and afford themselves the discipline of prayerful time of reflection, I don't mean an hour every day. I know most people aren't going to do that. They don't have time for that. But just some kind of focused awareness, 10, 15, 20 minutes. If you have an hour, I know, I don't know what, 60% of us are retired. Well, I shouldn't, what do you mean us? 60% of you are retired. Can you give God an hour a day? Sit still. Say a rosary. Think about your life. And I don't mean in some little way. Prayer of memories. Savoring blessings. Thanking God for all the mistakes you made because they taught you who you were. Because if we have an interior life and we're at peace with ourselves, we don't need to grasp and gather and hoard things to somehow give meaning and purpose to ourselves. Because we know who we are from the inside out. That's the challenge and the obvious secret of the Christian life. To know yourself, to love yourself, and accept yourself as you are. Wow, I should be a psychologist. Maybe I'll be that in my second life. Nah, I think I'll just sit in heaven and enjoy things. But you see, most of us don't want to hear that. We're really happy to watch our phone 7 or 8 hours a day. I exaggerated that. I only watch mine for 6. If we don't deal with things in the past that are hurting us or burdening our souls and our hearts, but we bury them for so long that we forget they're there. To know yourself is to know God. And to know God is to know and love yourself, to accept yourself. And then we don't have to be grasping and gathering and hoarding like that. As opposed to people who are not happy, they're rarely satisfied, they tend to need more, they gather more, and they compete more. That's literally a fact. Prayer is therapeutic. It centers the self in God, creates hopeful trust. When a person prays from the heart, they feel heard and seen by God. I know there's people here, no offense to anybody, I know there's lonely people here, I know there is. And I don't have a solution for that. And I could probably come up with 3 or 4, even 5 things off the top of my head. Well, Father, I try to do that, but I'm just worn out with it. I just pray. That's boring. Nobody's listening. Put some skin in the game. Pray from your heart. Pray from your sadness. Pray from your loneliness. Pray from the depth of yourself. Because God gave the depth of himself to us in the heart and soul, body and blood, soul and divinity, as the divine mercy says in Jesus. Because you know, as I say often enough, God is all over you like white on rice. And wherever you are, God is. And how you feel does not diminish the quality or the capacity of God's presence to be with you. It only hinders our ability to perceive and recognize and accept God. When we allow Christ to be the center of our lives, and I don't mean, oh, Jesus, Jesus. No. Christ is the center of your life in the midst of the movements and the rhythms of your life. So that when you do a good thing, you do a simple deed, you know that grace is active and present, and it should be a stability and a security and a peace in you. Because the news will drive you crazy, and if you're listening to too much news, no wonder you can't pray. Notice in the gospel how Jesus does not take on the problem of the disgruntled brother. Now, this seems like away from the topic. I don't think it is. Hey, tell my brother to give me my share of the inheritance. Boy, that sounds like a headache, doesn't it? When people bring their problems to you, do you feel like you need to fix that problem? A lot of us do. I guess it's a professional problem for me. And it's very stressful at times. I could tell you stories, but I don't have the time. And I have to be careful of that. Just because people will ask a difficult question, if you automatically feel you have to fix their problem, notice, who appointed you, me, as your arbitrator and judge? Jesus isn't taking that on, because isn't that just another way to gather and collect soliciting approval? Oh, I can fix that for you. Take care of your own stuff. Now, that's not the same as reaching out and helping somebody, like telling somebody their garage is on fire. If you can do that, you probably ought to do it, especially if you live next door, right? But if someone comes and says this and then, and they're whining, it's like, you're whining. Like, okay, I'm really sorry for that. I'll say a prayer for you. Jesus didn't take all that on because he knew himself centered in God. Was he just compassionate? Was he mean? No, he wasn't mean. He's just speaking truth. We need to realize and remember that when we worship and praise God, you realize how happy you are making God? Do you ever think that God actually likes you? Huh? Well, I'm just trying to behave so I don't get in trouble. Yeah, do you think maybe God likes you? I'll close with this, and I wish I had the video because the words don't do it. I'm not on Facebook. I do look at YouTube now and again. No, okay, every day. Only 3 or 4 hours at a time. Come on, I got work to do. Anyways, there's this video there, and they're all over the place, but this particular one really struck me, and I'm sorry I can't describe it for you very well, but I know because I used this at 4 o'clock Mass, and somebody sent me a video of their dog doing the same thing. But the video was of a guy that had been away for a while, and he came home, and he walked in the house, and the dog was there, and the dog was like, very skittish. Until he realized it was the master. And he went up very slowly. Sniff, 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 sniff. Making myself look silly again. And he sniffs the guy. And all of a sudden the dog's going, and the tail's going, and the dog's practically knocking himself over because he's so happy to see his master. Am I right? Am I right? That's what God does when you sit down and pray. And God's going, is that you? Is that you? You finally, you're here. Oh, God is like going nuts because you finally sat down and give him 5 minutes. Do God a favor. Make him really happy today. Shock God, will you? Just sit down and just give God 5 minutes and just love the Lord consciously and intentionally only because you became aware that he's loving you first. You guys have a great day.